If you're with us tonight, thank you for being here. I guess for the Carnes congregation, this might be the first time many of you have heard me speak. And if you're one of our guests, then this is definitely the first time that you've heard me speak. Thank you for being here, especially to the youth. Thank you guys for traveling and being with us tonight. The fellowship was awesome. I'm glad I got to meet some of you. And I hope you guys enjoyed being with us tonight. If you have your Bibles, you can turn over to Mark chapter 2. But I was originally supposed to speak 2 weeks from now, but Steve sent me a text and said, hey, do you want to speak next Sunday, since all the youth were coming? And in my head, I said, no, I don't. But what I texted back was, yeah, that's a great idea. And so tonight, I thought it would be a good introduction. I'm thankful for the opportunity. And so I am not a traditional preacher. I love to tell stories. And since this is kind of my first opportunity with you guys, I want to tell you my story and tell you the power of a family or a group of people who care so much that it'll change your life. So if you were on Advance with us, this is going to sound somewhat familiar because I told part of my story while we were there. But I want you to go back in time with me about 10 years ago, which makes me feel really old. But 10 years ago, I had a friend. I was a freshman in high school, and our world kind of changed dramatically all of a sudden. At the end of my eighth grade year, my dad lost his job. And it was a strange time for our family. We moved to Tennessee, and my dad had a great job. Headquarters just happened to be down the road. My dad's a restaurant manager, and so his plan was to go through that company and someday retire at the home office. And that was the plan for years. And so when we moved to Tennessee, it seemed like that plan was going to work out just fine. My dad started out as just a regular back-of-the-house manager when we moved to Tennessee. And after just a few months, they decided that they needed to move him to another store, and he became the general manager. He became the big boss of the store in Mount Juliet. And so he loved this job. He loved this company, enjoyed everything that he did. And so the day that he was fired was a shock to our family. It was a few years down the road, and I remember it was on a Friday afternoon. And my dad, the way it works, if you're a restaurant manager, is usually you've got some weird hours. My dad was never home before I was. And I remember I got off the school bus, and my dad and my little brother were playing basketball in the driveway. And I remember getting off the bus, and that's weird. And we walk down the driveway, and me and my older brother, and he says, hey, we're going to play basketball for a while. We play basketball. My mom comes home, and you can see the look on her face that she knows that he's not supposed to be there either. And Dad says, all right, you guys keep playing. I got to go inside and talk to Mom. Dad goes inside. About an hour later, Mom comes out and sits on the porch, and you can see that she's been crying. And so in that moment, I knew there was something really wrong. And so we go out to dinner that night, and we sit down at the dinner table, and Dad tells us, hey, I lost my job today. It's not a big deal. We're going to be just fine. Everything will work out. That was mostly true. Everything did work out. However, it took a while for my dad to find a job. This was the job that my dad had always wanted. He was making more money than he ever had before, and we were doing quite well as a family. Mom wasn't working at the time. And so we didn't have a whole lot of money. A couple months go by, Dad still doesn't have a job. And so going into my freshman year, my dad gets a job. The only problem is it's 12 hours away. He gets a job in Houston, Texas. We live on the outskirts of Nashville. And so my dad moves to Texas and rents a tiny little apartment, and the rest of the family stays home because school just started. And so my parents had made the decision that my two brothers and I, we were going to finish the school year. And in May, we're all moving to Houston. And so that's the environment that I walk into my freshman year. How many of you guys are there any freshmen in here right now? How many of you have ever been freshmen? Probably a lot more. Yeah. Okay, freshman year's weird, right? You enter a new school, there's new decisions, there's new friend groups. Your friends from middle school, they change. And so it's a weird year already, and so I walk into a new environment that's strange and unknown to me. My dad's not at home, so home is kind of strange and unusual to me, and that's the environment that I found myself in. That's the place that I found myself. If you back up a little bit further, my family and I always grew up religious. We had bounced around from denomination to denomination. And so we were always religious. My mom claimed to be a Christian. My dad believed in God, but was by no means committed to him. And so my mom used to take us to church on Sundays, though. And we had landed at this community church that we loved. It was cool, right? They had this thing called a youth minister for the first time ever. And he was the coolest guy I'd ever met. But the only problem was, is he was the part-time youth minister for a while. And they eventually hired him on full-time. And his job was to do kind of what I do now. Hang out with kids and teach them about Jesus. Well, what happened was, is they weren't very good at accounting. And they couldn't afford to pay that guy. And so they fired him. And as time went along, there was some anger and some disappointment, and my family stopped going to church, right? And so freshman year rolls around, and I just want you to get an idea of where I was. As a freshman, I was confused, and I was angry, and I didn't understand what was going on. And so freshman year starts to change, and I start throwing myself into anything that I can. Freshman year rolls around, I joined the football team. I joined the wrestling team. I joined ROTC. I hang out with the band kids at lunch. I try to put my foot in every place that I could because I was looking for a place to belong. I was looking for a family because my family at home wasn't working and there was no family in a religious sense. And so as that year goes along, I find myself starting to wonder, is there really a God at all? Could there be a God if my dad lives 12 hours away? Could there be a God if the person that I looked up to most in the world and thought he was the coolest guy in the world, if he can devote his entire life to Jesus and then he gets fired? And so I was angry and I was disappointed and I was frustrated and I put it all on God. And that's where I found myself. And so as time went along, I ate lunch with a guy. Who's now my best friend. I was in his wedding just a few months ago. But I used to eat lunch with him. And one day we're sitting at the lunch table. And we're sitting in the grand hallway. Because we had a free lunch in the school building. But we're sitting at the lunch circle, I guess. We're sitting on the floor. And he starts shooting rubber bands at people. And on the rubber band it had a date. I don't remember what the date was. I don't remember even what the rubber band said. But he shot one at me and he said, "What are you doing next weekend?" I said, "I have no idea." And he said, "You're coming to church with me." And I was like, "Coming to church with you?" And he said, "Yeah, we've got a retreat and I think that you would really enjoy it." All right, now go with me to Mark chapter 2. I want to talk about friendship and I want to talk about what it can do for you. In Mark chapter 2, and we're going to pick up in verse 2, Jesus is in Capernaum. And we'll pick up in verse 2. It says, "The people heard that he had come, and they gathered in such a large numbers that there was no room left, not even outside the door, and he preached the word to them." So we pick up in this scene, and what we find is Jesus in Capernaum, and as he's there, he starts to teach. And I don't know if any of you have seen The Chosen. I'm sure some of you have. But The Chosen, I think, does a good job kind of showing you and giving you a picture of what this might look like. And Jesus is teaching and the crowd becomes just a little bit bigger. And a little bit bigger. And a little bit bigger. And to the point where nobody can get in anymore. And so you just have Jesus teaching these people. And the crowd gathers, but some people hear it who were looking for something. And so they're looking for something. And in verse 3 it says, "Some men came bringing to him a paralyzed man carried by four of them." These four men, or these five men, as the paralyzed man's with them, they hear that Jesus is in town and they know that Jesus can do something for their friend. That he can do something for this paralyzed man. And that's where I found myself at the lunch table, or the lunch circle, as we sat on the grand hallway steps. He said he knew that all of his friends needed Jesus. And so what he tried to do is he tried to shoot us with a rubber band, right? Because that's what freshman boys do. He shoots me with a rubber band and he says, I think you would really enjoy this. And he starts talking about it. And he says, here's what's going to happen. He's like, "We get there Friday night. You get off the bus. You unload your stuff. And then we get snacks." And I was like, "Okay, snacks. That's a good start." He said, "We're going to play some games." He's like, "We play all these crazy games. You're going to love it. We spit crickets." And I was like, "You spit what?" He said, "Crickets." And I was like, okay, whatever. And he starts talking to me. He said, "But you'll really enjoy it. There's all this free time. There's all these girls there." You know, he's really selling it, right? He's really wanting me to go. And he starts going down the list of things. And I start checking them off. And I'm like, I like that. I like that. And then he said, and then we have these devotionals. And I was like, I don't know about that one. So I put a dash next to it, right? However, he had all of these incentives for me. All of these things that made me want to go. I was looking for friends. I was looking for fun. And I was looking for free food. And they had all three. And so I went home to my mom. I said, Mom, one of my friends invited me on a church retreat. And she said, okay. I was like, can I go? She was like, when is it? I said, next Friday. She said, you're out of the house? Check. And so she dropped me off that Friday. Packed a bag. She even did my laundry for me. It was awesome. I packed a bag and I went on this retreat for the first time because this one friend knew that I needed to get to Jesus, and he knew that for me it wasn't a physical impairment, but it was the fact that I just was looking for something fun to do. So he entices me along the way and I show up on this first retreat. And so here's what I want to talk about. Here's what I want us to understand is there's power in friendship and there's power in family. That's really what I was seeking. My family at home was broken, so I was seeking a place. I was seeking a family to kind of make up for it. And so he found that. And so what I want us to pick up on this first verse is, or these first few verses is simple. Understand exactly what Jesus has to offer. These four men, as they carry this man to Jesus, understand that Jesus can do things for their friend. He can do things for this paralyzed man that no one else can. They can just get him there, everything can change. If they can just get him to Jesus, his world will change forever. And so this friend of mine said, okay, we can just get him there. And so the first thing that you have to do is understand that Jesus can do what he needs to do for your friends. He can do what he needs to do for his family. And then the second thing is, once you understand what he can do, it should motivate you to action. If you're at the Carnes congregation this morning, Spencer talked about those two people that you're supposed to remember to. If you love Jesus and you understand what he can do, that list should be easy. There should be two people that you can't wait to tell that Jesus can change their life, that Jesus can do something for them if they just wake up and see it. I had friends who knew the power of Jesus and what it could do for me. It didn't mean that I was ready to follow him. It didn't mean that I was ready to give up the things that I needed to give up in order to follow him. But he knew that I needed to be there. At the beginning of verse 4, we're just going to read part of it. It says, they could not get him to Jesus because of the crowd. So there's kind of a good, bad situation going on. Jesus starts teaching and so many people want to hear it, but they can't get to him. The crowd is so great. There are so many people that want to be at the feet of Jesus that they can't move him. They can't get him there. And they look at the crowd, and the story could have ended differently. The story could have said, and the crowd was there, and they sat, and they listened to Jesus. And before they could get him there, Jesus left. But instead, there's the second part of verse 4 that changes everything, right? The second part of verse 4 says this. They made an opening in the roof above Jesus by digging through it, and then lowered the mat that the man was lying on. See, Spencer knew that I needed to be with Jesus. And so he got me there. And when I got there, I still wasn't ready to be with Jesus. There were still boundaries in the way. For this guy, it was a crowd of people, and then it was some tiles and some different things on the roof that they needed to break through in order to get him to Jesus. Spencer at the time, that's my buddy's name, Spencer at the time didn't know all of the boundaries that were in the way. Spencer just saw me and thought, that guy needs Jesus. We had become friends because we watched a movie, the same movie going into sixth grade. It was a stupid cartoon. But all because of a cartoon, we had a somewhat of a friendship. We weren't close friends by any means. And yet he knew if he could just get somebody to Jesus, Jesus would take care of the rest. And so I show up, but there's still boundaries in the way. And so what I call the next group of people are the roof rippers. And so the next thing that you have to be willing to do is take down the barriers in the way of somebody else. So you've got to know the power of Jesus because that should move you to action. And then number two, you've got to be willing to take out some of the barriers that are in people's ways. Spencer didn't know that there was a barrier in my heart. He didn't know that I was angry. I don't even think he knew that my dad wasn't at home. I don't think he knew that I didn't believe in God. He maybe could have guessed because of my actions. But he knew that I needed to be with Jesus. And so when I showed up on that retreat, something happened. When I got on the bus, Spencer didn't sit with me. So I sat down in a seat that was empty, and somebody came and sat down in that seat next to me. And they talked to me. It was a 2-hour bus ride or so, and he talked to me the whole way. And then the guys behind me, they start slapping me on the shoulder. Hey, who are you? What are you doing here? They talked to me. They wanted me to be there. And then we got off the bus, and there was adults there. There were chaperones on the trip who said, hey, I think you're new. What's your name? And they talked to me. They asked me questions, and they wanted to know who I was. And those barriers, before I even knew it, started to be pulled just a little bit. They were starting to shift. We play the games for the night, and I'm having a great time. The devotional comes up, and I sit there, and I listen, and I nod my head politely. Sing the songs, but I'm not really paying that much attention. It ends, and there's more games. We continue to play these games. And then the next day, there's another chaperone on the trip. His name's Phil Wagner. And Phil Wagner, I didn't have anybody to go on the prayer walk with me. And Phil Wagner comes over and he said, you look like a cool dude. You want to pray with me? And so Phil Wagner and I, this guy who's, I don't know, 30-something years older than me, he says, I want to take a walk with you and we're going to pray. And we prayed together 5 times on this prayer walk. And we talked about different things. And he showed genuine interest in who I was. And all of a sudden, those barriers started to move a little bit more. The rest of the weekend goes on, and I make all these friends. And there's all these guys who, it's late at night. And they say, hey, you didn't come from a place where you sing without instruments, do you? And I was like, no. I was like, it's kind of weird you guys don't have instruments. And they're like, well, we're going to do a singing tonight. And we've got these books. We can teach you how to sing some of our songs. So they sat up and we sang songs together that night. And then we sat on the porch and we talked about all kinds of weird stuff, right? Because that's what high school boys do. But inside the weird stuff, they also were like, oh, asking me questions about myself and then asking, hey, what do you think about this? And over time, I start becoming friends with these people. I came home from that retreat and I remember I walked in the front door. I said, Mom, I found our new church. This is where I want to go to church. And she said, okay. And she's like, well, when did they meet? And I was like, I don't know. And so we found out when they met. And that Wednesday night, my mom dropped me off at church that night. But I wasn't alone. I had my 2 brothers with me. And she went across the street to church as well. And things started to change. And I started coming every Wednesday. And then I started coming every Sunday. And then there were Sundays that Mom had to work or Mom wasn't feeling good. And so Michaela Welch's dad would pick me up. Or Michaela Welch would pick me up. Or other people from church would pick us up. And all of a sudden, all these people started becoming roof rippers for me. They became the people who saw the obstacle between me and Jesus and said, that's unacceptable. They weren't willing to let that stand. And so they started removing the obstacles between me and Jesus. In verse 5, when Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralyzed man, son, your sins are forgiven. Now some of the teachers of the law were sitting there thinking to themselves, why does this fellow talk like that? He's blaspheming. Who can forgive sins but God alone? Immediately Jesus knew in his spirit that this is what they were thinking in their hearts. And he said to them, why are you thinking these things? Which is easier to say to this paralyzed man, your sins are forgiven, or to say, get up, take your mat and walk. But I want you to know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins. His friends knew that Jesus could heal him. They didn't know how much Jesus could do. They understood just a tiny part of his power, and yet they knew that was enough to get this man to Jesus. All of my friends knew the power that Jesus really had, right? Because the next, Jesus wants us to understand and know that he has the power to forgive sins. There's nobody else that can, and Jesus says, that's me. That's what I'm here to do. And so these men, they tear down the roof and they get him to Jesus. And Jesus does the rest. When they laid him in front of Jesus, he heals them and he answers some questions. It's strange. And the religious leaders almost don't want to believe it, right? Who could do that? Who can forgive sins? Only God can. And Jesus says, well, pay attention. That's what I'm here to do. That's why I'm here. I'm here to show you that I am. If you finish verse 10, it says, so he said to the man, I tell you, get up, take your mat and go home. He got up, he took his mat and he walked out in full view of all of them. This amazed everyone and they praised God saying, we have never seen anything like this. Last thing that we need to understand, sometimes we get too caught up in ourselves when it comes to evangelism. The only thing that we can do for people is take them to Jesus and help tear down some barriers. Jesus does the rest. Our job is to get them there. Our job is to take away some of the things that are put there by other people or by past experiences so that they can see Jesus, so that Jesus can do what Jesus does. You notice these men couldn't heal the paralyzed man. These men couldn't forgive sins, but Jesus could. I needed Jesus and I didn't even know it. When I showed up on that first retreat, I was looking for a place to belong. I didn't quite understand it. And I found it with a group of people. They called themselves the MJYG, right? The Mount Juliet Youth Group. They called themselves Yetis. Youth groups are weird places. It's awesome. But I showed up and I didn't understand what I was looking for, but Jesus was there. Spencer brought me. He was one of the guys that carried me. And there are countless names and people who started ripping apart the roof slats so that I could see Jesus. That summer, as time went along, it came time for a mission trip. And I really wanted to go. Again, understand that I wasn't necessarily there for Jesus. But once I figured out that it was because of Jesus, all of these things that I wanted were happening, that I found a place to belong, a place where people loved me. So he's not the guy that I've been angry at for the last year. I'm angry at life. I'm angry at the situation. But I'm not angry at God anymore. And so start going to everything that I can. And you know, over time, Jesus starts to sink in a little bit. Because if you get people that close to Jesus, they can't help but hear it. They can deny it, but they can't help but hear the words of Jesus. And so Jesus' words started to sink in. God's love for me started to sink in. And before that mission trip, all I knew is I wanted to go and I wanted to tell other people about Jesus. There's only one problem. I wasn't a Christian yet. My youth minister knew that. I did not. I came and I sat down in his office one day and he was like, hey, all the guys that go on the mission trip have to be ready to lead this Bible study. Sit down and do it with me so you'll be prepared to do it. And I was like, yeah, that's great. And we sit down and we start talking. We start opening the Bible and we start going through Acts. And as we're sitting there, he can see that there's some understanding going on. There's some confusion. And he said, is there anything different about the way that you became a Christian than the way the Bible did? And I was like, yeah. I was like, there's a lot of differences actually. He says, well, you want to do anything about that? And he's like, what do you think it is? And I was like, well, in Acts, all of these people, all of these Christians, they decide to put on Christ in baptism. They understand that they're lost. They understand that they have sin. And they understand that Jesus is the only way. And they also understand that they're the ones who put him on the cross. And so that day I became a Christian. About a month later, my brothers become a Christian. 4 years after that, I baptized my dad, and he became a Christian. Fast forward to today, my parents and my oldest brother are all members of the Mount Juliet Church of Christ. My little brother is a youth minister in Martin, Tennessee, all because I had one friend who knew he just had to get me to Jesus. He was one of the roof rippers, but really, he brought me in, and it wasn't just him. Because if it had just been him, I would have left. I had other friends who had tried. They had brought me into church, and I sat there alone on a Wednesday night, and I didn't care to stay. but because the family of God took me in. Yeah, it was the kids in the youth group, but it was also Phil Wagner and some of the adults on that trip who took the time to sit down and say, hey, tell me about yourself. Why are you here? Who brought you? That's awesome. And they took interest in me. The family of God loved me so much that I wanted to be a part of it. They were the roof rippers in my life. This is a shorter lesson tonight, but as we wrap up, I just want some quick reminders. When you look at this story, you get to see the heart of these men who carry their friend to Jesus. They know that Jesus is awesome. They know that others need Jesus. And because of that, they're motivated to take them. However, to get in there, they have to go through some barriers. Know that Jesus is awesome. Know what he can do for people. Be prepared to rip down those barriers. And finally, let Jesus do his thing. He's got it. He has control. So my encouragement for you tonight is to be one of those people. When you see someone who needs Jesus, take them to him. And if they're unwilling to go, wait patiently and start removing some of those barriers. It may take 6 months. It may take 6 years. Be patient and let Jesus do his thing. Tonight, maybe you're one of those people where you were brought. You've gotten closer and closer to Jesus and you've seen his power. You see his will and you want to follow him. Tonight, the baptistry's ready if you're ready to accept him. If you have become a Christian, but tonight you find yourself away from him, he's pleading with you to come home. If you just need the prayers of the church, we ask you to come forward as we stand and sing.